The Spirit led Jesus into the desert. Last Sunday, we followed in the Gospel the vivid account of the transforming event of the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, sharing with Jesus in the scene of the Transfiguration. Truly, that was the mountaintop experience. Something special, something uplifting, something inspiring, and perhaps even sanctifying. An experience of beauty and of glory. Now, at the beginning of the holy season of Lent, we remember what was for Jesus an experience of hardship and trial and testing and endurance. This was a wilderness experience. We might well say that the wilderness experience is the opposite of the mountaintop one, but it isn't that simple. In our time, we will most frequently find the word wilderness used in the ecological sense when we know that the wilderness is in danger from human interference and exploitation. We know that endangered species are being protected from this depredation. Or we hear of the dangers of global warming or of losing the tropical rainforests. And we talk or we hear about carbon loss, replacement, substitution. But the wilderness has many applications. Forget about I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Forget about the Bush Tucker challenges and all that nastiness. A politician may be sent into the wilderness. Indeed, we sometimes wish more of them were. This may happen because they lose favour or a promotion in a party or in the government. Winston Churchill had a long period that's often referred to in his biographies as wilderness years, when he was excluded from power and influence. And his advice and his warnings often went unheeded because they were from too far away from the seat of power. The word wilderness then suggests a wild, untamed landscape that is dry, barren, unproductive. Or, as I was reminded when I saw that film about the penguins, a frozen waste. I must admit, I didn't grow up thinking about a frozen, wasted wilderness, although I knew about the wasted wilderness because the words are in the hymn. But the wilderness of sin, I can remember being depicted in the big family Bible that we had at home with the colour little prints. And the wilderness was a gay, nasty-looking place where you would die of hunger or thirst easily. Remember again, Lawrence of Arabia. Great wilderness portrayal there. This can make the wilderness a place of isolation and discomfort, a place where being alone might be character-forming or heartbreaking. Of course, if you've got your Swiss Army knife with you, you can do anything. But it's a place of serious, serious challenge. Certainly, it will not afford the benefits of a mountaintop. After his baptism in the Jordan, Jesus went on retreat into this desert. He stayed there for many nights and days. It says 40. 40 is a wonderful biblical figure. You've probably heard me saying this before. We talk about the 40 days and nights in the ark. We talk about the 40 years in the wilderness. 40 years means a guy long time, as your granny and mine might have said. Who's counting? But we count it, of course, in the church calendar because that's the period of Lent. While Jesus was on these 40 days of retreat, he forged within himself the strength that he needed to take him on the way he was to go. He chose that way. The wilderness was for Jesus the place where he went to pray, to think, to meditate, to make the decisions, the choices and pledges which would determine his future. It wasn't a place of exile or rejection. It was more a refuge of solitude, a place maybe he could go for peace and quiet. When we hear about Jesus praying in the Bible, he goes apart to pray. If the disciples go with him or follow him, they usually fall asleep somewhere over there while he's wrestling with whatever it is that leads him to prayer. He became exasperated, we know, when he went away to be alone and to pray and to meditate. And suddenly he found all these people following him. Not just the paparazzi, but the common people who wanted to share some of that magnetic feeling that they got from his presence. He almost couldn't get away from them. And this is the time when he really is alone. He must at some time have discussed with his disciples the course of that time of withdrawal and testing and its meaning for him. Otherwise, we would know little of it. Jesus didn't write a memoir. His autobiography doesn't exist. His biographers are many, and their recollections sometimes conflict. That's one of the wonderful things about the gospel, which seems to me to be the greatest evidence of the truth. We might conjecture then about Jesus' thoughts and feelings which followed that amazing baptism in the Jordan with its revelation of God's approval. How might Jesus have tried to read his destiny in the light of the signs of that day? Maybe that's what he needed to do when he was in the wilderness. Could he have gone back home to the life of a carpenter in the village of Nazareth? Could he have carried on as a local preacher and a teacher, a leader in the synagogue, perhaps, but known only in his own corner of the land? There were all sorts of possibilities before him, and the temptations that are presented in our text by the writer of Matthew sum these up in stark ways. There is first the satisfaction of human needs and wants, appetite, and even greed, involving the capability of alluring or seducing others. There is the claim of superhuman qualities or powers, the sorts of things that would appeal in the arrogance of youth when we think we can do anything. And like so many young people today, we think we are fireproof. Bad things will never happen to us. We might be capable of anything. Well, maybe. Then there is the temptation of power over states and nations, the lure of worldly status and tribute. And within these three formula, we can try to find many levels of meaning, of understanding and comparison of the meaning of temptation, what temptation was for Jesus in ways great and small. There can be no one here who doesn't know temptation. There were many of us who have succumbed to temptation in one way or another. Within our human nature, we recognize so much that we share, and we are reminded that Jesus shared our nature, that he too was human. So we have to understand that he shared the experiences of temptation and still shares them with you and me. We may also have had wilderness experiences in our lives, times of testing, times of decision, times of choosing, times of facing up to external problems, but also to problems within ourselves. The wilderness will always continue to have special meaning for Israel. It was the place of freedom for the tribes who left Egypt following Moses in the Exodus. It was the place where they were tried and tested, found wanting, and left to work out a new mode of life. and a new mode of worship for themselves. It was the place God took them to teach them, the place where Moses delivered the commandments of the law, where Elijah heard God's still small voice, where people underwent change and cleansing. Among the important features of the wilderness is its unformed state, and this must be significant for us today, as there is almost nowhere in the world still untouched by human hand. And when we talk about an unformed state, as I have just done, I don't mean it was all on its own. The wilderness can recreate itself. If you leave your garden for too long, you'll know that. You look at the railway lines that are overgrown and how the weeds can come up through the roads when the old bits are knocked off and the motorway forges ahead. The wilderness is always ready to reclaim its own. But we and our ancestors changed the wilderness by cultivation, by transport, by building, by construction. Maybe that's where some of the flooding that's threatening our country's regions come from. Nothing is that simple, is it? The wilderness is anything but the raw and challenging and baking hot desert of the Holy Land. It isn't a place where we can enjoy the views and then go home. The desert where the visitor is unwelcome, inhospitably received in an environment where survival is a struggle, that's where the challenges are. Jesus is very much alone, and the voices that tempt him are personal. Now, I know it says the devil tempts him in our Good News version. In other versions of the Bible, it says Satan. In some more modern ones, it says the tempter. It makes it sound as if it's an external phenomenon. And when I spoke to the boys and girls, I always remember Oor Willie, who had a good angel on one side and a badger on the other. And I think Dennis the Menace had the same thing in a cartoon. That's temptation. And temptation sometimes tells you what to do, and also sometimes tells you what not to do. Oh, why wouldn't you do that? Who was it who said that? You don't want to do that. Is it Dick Emery or something? A long time ago. But I think of this temptation not as an external presence, but as an internal tormenting voice. And studies of mental health in our time let us know that people hear voices in their heads, often telling them to do wrong. This is a good explanation of what happens to Jesus in this time of wilderness. Today's equivalent of the tempter in the desert might well be the spin doctor. Political advisor is the most respectable term. The voice that's in your ear, in your head. And it's there. It says, be realistic, face the facts, be practical. Don't be a mug or don't be a soft touch. Don't be a loser. This is the way to do it. Others have pulled it off. This isn't the best time to be too rigid about your morality or your principles, too scrupulous about your tax return, it might be, too honest about your opinion, too generous in your attitude or in your giving or caring. The tempting voice is a counsel of self-interest, or it appears to be. And what is it talking about? Power, influence. Jesus could have become some kind of amazing public magician if he'd given in to some of these temptations. Instead, he turns aside, he uses scripture. Do not put your God to the test as you did at Massah, said Moses. You're not testing God when you're testing. God is testing you, or you are testing yourself. The claims focus on the self because they say, if you are the Son of God. If you are who you think you are, you could do this. This can be yours. This could happen to you. And in each case, Jesus' answer is to change the focus away from himself to God. I've often contrasted this passage with the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is talking about how people are blessed by God because they try to follow him and they're not thinking about self. Such a commitment lies at the whole basis of Jesus' thinking and the choices he made. Remember, the choices he made were not for himself, but for you and me. Through this season of Lent, we can try to grasp the meaning of the choices that he made and try to see the truth about the choices. He will help us to make the choices we have to make as we journey through life. If we can find a quietness to think in amid the bustle of life, can we then focus upon God and his word? And can we too find the strength that we need to be good Christians? In conclusion, I'm going to read to you a meditation about testing from Carl Micklem's book of Contemporary Prayers, which is quite old now, contemporary with me. This is testing. God our Father, life pulls us in many directions and presents many possibilities. Sometimes we do not know which way to turn. There are so many claims upon our time, so many demands for our attention, that the very range of choices before us drives us to distraction. It is then that we need you. Yours is the ultimate claim on our lives. Help us to listen for it in all the other claims that are made on us, because we cannot do everything. Help us to get our priorities right, to know what you want us to know and what we have to leave. May the stress and strain of life not break us, but make us stronger. For Jesus' sake. Father, what happens to us is a great test of character, and our trials leave us the worse or the better, depending on how we react to them. We thank you for Jesus, for he was made perfect through sufferings. Help us too to use our trials and sufferings positively to face difficult situations and to make the best of them. In his name we pray.